Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the March 3rd, 2015 member meeting of the Tompkins County Legislature. I wondered if you would please stand with me and recite the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Just a couple of housekeeping things. Remember, the exits in case of an emergency are to my right in the back of the room and to my left in the front of the room. Please silence your cell phones and other electronic devices. May we have the roll call of members, please?
Mr. Dennis is asked to be excused. Ms. Herrera will be arriving later this evening. Ms. Kiefer?
Present.
Mr. Klein?
Here.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
Present.
Mr. McKenna?
Here.
Mr. Morey has asked to be excused this evening. Ms. Robertson will be arriving later this evening, as will Mr. Shinagawa. Mr. Sigler?
Here.
Mr. Stein?
Here.
Mr. Burbank?
Here.
Ms. Jock?
I am here.
And Ms. Herrera will be arriving later this evening. Mr. Lane?
Here.
We have 9 members present.
We have a quorum. Not very good roads for people, and so hopefully we'll be filling up a little bit as we go along here tonight. Presentation of proclamations, petitions, communications, and notices.
Communications are on the desks.
We have a special presentation tonight. I'm very pleased about that. And I wonder if John Spence would come up to the podium, please, and announce the person that we're appointing as our new poet laureate for Tompkins County.
Woo-hoo. It's not like a woo-woo for poet laureate. Thank you all for your time. This, as you know, I'm relatively new to the Community Arts Partnership. It's your arts council. And so this was the first time I went through this process. I have to say that it was delightful. We put out a call for nominations for Poet Laureate, and we got several nominations, all of them quite good, which tells me that poetry is alive and well in Tompkins County. So that's worth a woo-woo right there. One name stood out, and that was Jack Hopper. The thing that not only did we like Jack's background, and I hope his background has been distributed to you. If not, I'll make sure that happens soon. Not only his background and his poetry, but he got an awful lot of support. There were several emails that came in lending their support to his nomination. And when I called Jack the next day to make sure that he was still interested in the position, I told him at that point he's got a lot of friends. So I'm excited to work with him in the coming year. Jack has been a playwright. He's obviously a poet. He's an editor. He's created Cayuga Books to publish local books by local authors. He plays guitar. And my understanding is that he also has a fondness, if he doesn't play ukulele, which puts him strongly into my camp. So, again, I'm excited about the coming year. We're going to make some interesting things happen poetically, I guarantee it. So at this point, I would like to introduce to you the 2015 Poet Laureate, Jack Hopper.
Thank you, John. Thank you all for coming out on a night like this.
Tip the mic down just a little bit, Mr. Hopper.
Oh, yeah, sure. Oh, yeah. How's that?
That's good.
Better? Okay. I don't know if it's potholes or poets that bring you here, but in any case, I'll try to make it as painless as possible. I'm really looking forward to this stint as the poet laureate. I'm a great admirer, more so in terms of what he has done than what he has written, with one of our poet laureates, Billy Collins, who's been a tremendous ambassador for poetry. And I hope that in that respect I can do something for poetry, for literature in general and writing, in getting people excited who have maybe not been that excited before, or who have sat back on things that they have written and been afraid to bring them forward. And so I'll try to get... there's a spectrum from much younger people to very many older people who I've seen in many readings around here. It's a very active community, as if you don't know that. And these are the people I'm going to try to reach. Meanwhile, if I may, I will read a poem. When I first came to Ithaca in 2005, one of the first sites that I was introduced to was Wegmans. I had known Wegmans before, but nothing like this. And I rapidly called it the Temple of Food. So I think you might appreciate this is called Parking Lot Moment.
Can I leave?
He just sits in the car, the radio on, with so much else to do. Out there, the eternal shopping congregation busily parking and moving in its pilgrim strides toward the New Jerusalem of food. The onion bagels will be gone. The last shad roe filched. Bye-bye, blueberry pie. And the lines so long. But still he sits there, edgy, unable to tell if it's late Mozart or maybe Muzio Clementi, that once an edit that he meant to buy. Yes, Clementi, confirms the radio announcer. He turns off the ignition, steals his heart for what's in store, and shuffles with the others down the drive and through those doors that always open by themselves. One more?
Sure.
Okay, they're short. More on the serious side, but still lightly. Democracy. Rowing along in a boat, an old friend and I idle into political argument. I question his sources. He obliges impeccably. How did the other party gain such an advocate? How did he drift their way? Where in the dark was I? Anger insinuates, but I'll not roil the waters, not when good cold beer awaits, and this or that damn fool will take the presidency anyway, not when we are drifting together, rowing the boat. Thank you.
Don't go away yet. Mike, before he goes away from the mic. I just...
Looks like you need to be grilled here. So.
No. I just want to ask, as I have before, if you have any website or link or books or anything. Since this job doesn't come with big bucks, I don't think we... the least we can do is support your work by reading it. And so I just want to know if there's any place else we can go and read any of your work and to thank you for serving.
Right. I do have a website. It's John Hopper Author. I think it's author or writer. Author, yeah. .com. And it goes on and on and on. You'll know more about me than I do. This book, Doubled, which came out a couple of years ago, is at the Buffalo Street Bookstore, along with another one, a much earlier one. There's three altogether. And there's information on the back of that, too. And there's something to circulate in here, which I haven't seen. Okay?
Great. Well, thank you for bringing poetry to our residents for the
thank
next
you.
Year
yeah.
in a special way. I hope
I'm up to the task. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Jack, and thanks for offering to serve as our poet laureate. John, thank you for all of the work that you did and the folks at the Community Arts Partnership, and we have so much talent in this county. The idea of a poet laureate came to us from former chair of the legislature, Stuart Stein. And, of course, we lost Stuart last year, sadly. But I think this is one of those places that his memory will live on and will live in art and the art of poetry here. So we thank you very much. We look forward to hearing more from Jack. We're going to go next to privilege of the floor. I don't have any blue cards. Is there anyone from the public that wants to speak tonight? Seeing none, we'll move on to privilege of the floor for municipal officials. Is there any municipal official? I'm not seeing one of those either. All right. We'll move on to privilege of the floor for legislators. Would someone like to speak? Ah, you all want to go home early. I can see with the weather. Dooley Kiefer.
According to the UN, today is World Wildlife Day. We get to come inside, they don't. But we should appreciate them.
Thank you, Dooley. Anyone else? Martha Robertson.
Sorry I'm late. Do you want to come down State Street or any hill down into the city of Ithaca, I think you have to wait a long time. So bad roads, but the plows are working on it and trying. I just want to say it's Women's History Month. Pleased about that, and looking forward to some events in the community. But that's it. Thank you. Sorry I'm late.
Leslie McBean Claiborne.
One of those events is the annual Sister Friends event on March 13th, next Friday. So all our women folk are invited. Not that men folk are not invited, just know that it is very woman-centric. So you might stick out like a sore thumb, but it's at Ithaca College, Emerson Suites, and our county does participate. We do some recruitment and marketing of county employment and the county as an employer up there, so we're excited about that. And I do have to beg my colleagues' forgiveness because I do have to leave early, and given the conditions of the roads, I'll have to run out of here a little early, because in my other life, one of the things I do is stage. And unfortunately, I have a performance this evening at the Kitchen Theater, $38,000 for this friendly face. So if you get out of here by 7:30, come to the Kitchen Theater and see the show. My friendly face.
Is that the name of the production?
$38,000 for a friendly face. A homecoming.
Sounds intriguing. Leslie. Anyone else? Okay, let's move on. We're pleased to have with us tonight the president of our Tompkins-Cortland Community College, Carl Haynes. Carl comes to us at least once a year to sit with us and talk about the state of our college. And we're pleased to have him here. Carl, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Mike. And thanks, everybody, for being here tonight and giving me the opportunity to share with you our State of the College report. Before I deliver my prepared remarks, I just want to make a quick reference to the annual report that I have here. It's a little bit different than the report that we've done in previous years. Short on a lot of numbers and statistics and data, and we've kind of focused on what have been the high points in terms of some of the stories that have come out of our college over the past year. So we've taken some of the accomplishments and kind of turned them and focused them on stories of and the people, really, who have helped those accomplishments come about. Now, that's not to say that we're walking away from all the data and the numbers and all that sort of thing. If you go to the TC website, click on or just put into the search box president, you'll go to my website, and there's a lot more data than you probably ever would want to imagine. But so all the information is there, organized by the various critical success factors that we work with at the college and so on. So, but I just wanted to draw that to your attention before I got started. I also passed out an advocacy plan, if you will. This was put out by the Association of Community College Presidents and kind of highlights the key points that we're advocating for in the upcoming ongoing legislative process right now. The budget deliberations are underway. So if anyone is inspired to want to write letters to our legislative representatives, to our governor, in support of this plan, we certainly would be happy for that support. And if anybody does do so and wants to ask me more detailed questions about the plan or what we're advocating for, bottom line is the priority is base aid, as you might imagine. So I'd be happy to answer those questions. So with that, let me deliver my remarks, and I'd be happy to answer any questions that you might have following that. But if you look at TC3's accomplishments this past year, you might find it unlikely that a college so clearly committed to developing cutting-edge, innovative programs finds itself in the midst of one of the more financially challenging periods in its history. But through all the challenges that you also are very familiar with, we've maintained our commitment to developing programs that respond to community needs and have also managed to strengthen our commitment to student success through a variety of initiatives. And while it might seem that the story of the college has recently focused on the financial issues, the story is always really about people. If you take a look at the annual report this year, you will see not only the highlights from some of the more significant accomplishments, but also the stories of people who make these accomplishments come to life. You're probably well aware of our Farm to Bistro initiative. Cultivari, our downtown Ithaca Culinary Center, has been functioning now for a couple of months. Not only is a restaurant serving local food and local wine and beer, but also an event center and a teaching training center for the next generation of chefs, hospitality owners, restaurant owners, and growers in our region. We're proud not only that we've been able to get off to such a successful start, but also of this concept, teaching the entire food system to students in all of the related curricula, culinary arts, hospitality and restaurant management, wine marketing, and sustainable farming and food systems. Our farmers will get an understanding of the restaurant side of the industry, while our future chefs and restaurant owners will be up in the fields learning organic and sustainable practices. It may seem hard to believe if you look outside tonight, but work on the farm is just about complete, and soon enough our farm director, Todd McLean, will soon be doing the first planting, the first one that our sustainable farming students will be able to participate in. And even as we suffer through this deep freeze, we're hard at work completing construction of our greenhouse, hoop houses for our all-growing season. Additionally, our solar farm, the construction is complete on that, and we are still awaiting, as of last week, a final connection with NYSEG before that becomes fully operational. And I think, as I partly reported previously, that we'll provide 90% of the campus power and continues our commitment to becoming a sustainable campus. It's a 10-acre solar array with over 8,600 solar panels. Our main campus building master plan is also probably halfway or maybe a little bit more than halfway complete. Our enrollment service center is functioning now, and several other infrastructure and classrooms and other aspects of that project are underway, and we expect to be fully complete really by the end of the summer. While Farm to Bistro has garnered a lot of media attention, we've had numerous other successes on campus directly related to student success, which is, of course, our primary mission. The network, the network peer mentor program is run out of our Office of Multicultural Services, and this program has grown in the past few years and has seen significant academic and social successes for its participants. Mentors are successful second-year students who provide guidance to first-generation students and students from traditionally underrepresented populations. And the success is undeniable. What started out as a pilot program for 10 students has grown into a 60 mentee cohort. And of that cohort, 74% had a 2.0 GPA this past semester, which of course impacts the entire cohort of traditionally underrepresented students. There are plans to continue to expand that program and even work with local high school students to strengthen the desire and capability to go to college. Professional development of faculty and staff remains a priority for us. And with the help of the TC3 Foundation, we've been able to continue to encourage our staff and faculty to pursue opportunities. Writing to Learn, taught at Bard College, is a unique program that two of our faculty members have brought back to TC3. Darlene Gold and Jean Cameron have developed a series of workshops and learning opportunities for our faculty to use this program, which encourages writing as a source of critical development and thought development in all of our disciplines. We've had 50 total faculty and staff participate, with about 40% of our full-time faculty taking part. And they come from a diverse range of programs, working with Jean and with Darlene to develop strategies for their classrooms. We've always done a lot with technology on campus to increase efficiency, support students, and one area that's undergone a revolution of sorts in the past few years is our library. Our director, Craig Keel, has worked very hard to expand online offerings and use technology to enhance the experience of our distance and online learners. Students can have books delivered to their homes and can return the books without leaving. They can also access our databases in our local Tompkins County Public Library, where librarians have been made adjunct librarians so that they can assist our students away from campus. Add to that the expansion of digital offerings and the creation of a video studio for student projects in the library, and you can see how our library has been able to stay ahead of our students' needs. We continue to see increased enrollment in our Global Connections programs and have had success developing special intensive English institutes for professionals, including a recent group of faculty from Mexico. Excuse me. We welcome students from more than 60 countries to TC3 and continue to develop partnerships with institutions in Spain, Italy, Dominican Republic, and several others. We also continue to support students in a variety of study abroad programs, still rare at community colleges. Trips we offer include Ireland, Italy, Colombia, Spain, and, of course, our 20-year commitment to providing nursing and medical support to indigenous populations in Nicaragua. TC3.biz has secured SUNY workforce training grants of about $99,000 to help clients with crucial workforce training. Among the businesses that have benefited were BorgWarner Morse Tech, Seaboard, BinOptics, and two over in Cortland, Pyrotech and Marietta Corporation. Altogether, over 200 customized training programs provided 3,500 individuals were trained in customized and open enrollment programs. Our student life programs continue to grow and continue to have a strong commitment to community involvement. From supporting the local food pantries to raising money for cancer research, our Panther Pride program has been a great success. Our athletes continue to be true student athletes. The overall GPA is above that of the general student population. In my report, you'll see the story of Hannah Wilderstein, a Dryden High School student, a graduate rather, and a soccer player at TC3, who not only has already had a long and distinguished record of community service with the Tompkins County United Way, and who also served as co-president of Phi Theta Kappa Honor Society, and currently is in Denmark participating in a special soccer academy. Our Panther teams were also, for the fourth consecutive year, awarded the NJCAA Region 3 Award for sportsmanship. And that's not in lieu of success. Once again, the majority of our teams enjoyed playoff success. Our athletic facilities continue to be a showcase for local high school teams and college teams besides our own. In 13-14, we hosted numerous high school regional championships, as well as the NCAA Women's Lacrosse Regional Championship. Our College Now concurrent enrollment program continues to be a tremendous success, providing local high school students with 22,000 college credits prior to graduation. More than 4,200 students at 50 high schools took advantage of our offerings, and that number continues to grow. Well, there's a highlight of some of the accomplishments of this past year, and now I want to kind of just shift for a couple of minutes to the challenges and how we're dealing, with reality. There is indeed a new reality for us financially. Our enrollment is down. There's a number of factors at play that contribute to that. It's harder than ever for students to afford college, even at community college. Even maximum aid cannot fully cover the cost, and both federal and state financial programs have become increasingly restrictive. Additionally, four-year colleges are experiencing the same issues in offering financial incentives to students who might have, in the past, attended TC3. In addition, increased media attention on higher education that calls into question the value of a college degree in terms of cost, debt load for students and parents, and the relevancy of the degree to employment opportunities, I believe has also been a major factor. The definition is, as a part of that media attention, the definition of value is invariably purely economic. Few lawmakers or media members include in the definition of value the traditional emphasis on the intrinsic value of the college experience. On top of all this, taxpayer support is down. For example, state support per full-time equivalent student is still $168 less per FTE than it was 5 years ago. And state support is hovering around 26%, when, of course, we all know it should be between 33 and 40%. And what that means is that the cost is passed on to our students. The reduced support from the state has the unintended consequence of creating a situation in which more of our students leave TC3 with debt. It really used to be relatively rare that students would leave or graduate from TC3 with any debt. Now a little bit more than half of our students graduate owing some money. And on top of all this, the demand for accountability and compliance continues to increase. We have always been strong in this area, so it's something we understand philosophically. But there is significant replication of effort that is taxing our resources significantly. Well, we've accepted this reality, and we're dealing with it. And in fact, in some areas, I think we're excelling. We've responded by creating cutting-edge programs that meet employment needs and prepare our students for work and transfer. For examples, I've already mentioned the Farm to Bistro and the new programs that we created as a part of that initiative. We recently developed a program in international studies and are currently in the development stages of an applied technology program in direct response to the needs of our strongest local employers. At the same time that we develop new programs, we aren't afraid to remove programs to improve efficiency and give our students realistic career and transfer opportunities. For example, we recently deregistered programs in office management administration, as well as electrical engineering technology, that one being replaced by the applied technology program. We've recently deregistered web design program and our computer forensics program, all AAS degree programs. On top of this, we are strong in programs that lead to jobs that can't be outsourced. An NPR story just last month emphasized the strengths of jobs that must be performed by people on site, jobs that can't be shipped overseas. We specialize in those programs. Of course, our culinary and Farm to Bistro programs are among those, but digital cinema, environmental science, criminal justice, biotechnology, early childhood, human services, nursing, and, of course, several others all meet this category. And we know that our graduates work in our local economy in very large numbers. 82% of recent TC3 graduates who are employed right here in New York State, and more than half of those work in our sponsorship area. We are an essential component of local workforce development, and we continue to innovate and remain ahead of local needs. Well, along with this, we've worked hard to be efficient. We continue to address staff and budget reductions, and some of that is still ongoing. Also, we're positioning ourselves to create new sources of revenue. Cultivari, the farm, real estate holdings through the foundation, global recruitment, and other means have provided additional alternative resources that are helping. And we've worked especially hard to not cut resources related to retention and student success. And along with this, we remain committed to accountability. I think the report that you'll see on the website, I think, gives you a strong sense of that. But in addition, the Middle States Association, our regional accrediting agency, recently held us up as a positive example of how we do and go about holding ourselves accountable. As a matter of fact, they referred other community colleges to us as a model for how we go about doing our institutional and programmatic assessments. And we've had a number of community colleges visit and or call to learn more about how we go about doing that. So we're very proud of that. Well, in closing, I think one message that I'd like to convey is that TC3 always believed that change is good. And we understand that not all change is easy. Recent changes have provided serious challenges. But we have not shrunk from those challenges. We have not hidden in our shell or cried for assistance. We've made our own way, never breaking from our vision and our mission of student success. From introducing a revolutionary farm to bistro concept, to developing new classrooms, a solar farm that moves us toward energy independence, we've continued to innovate and ensure that taxpayers get the most from their investment. So with that, I'll be happy to take any questions that you might have on anything that I've shared here or anything else for that matter that's going on at the college. Thank you.
Thank you, Carl. Questions? Carol Chalk.
Thank you, Carl. I think that we are all so proud of TC3 and you and what you've been able to accomplish here. You do a great job, and it's hard to do. So thank you for educating our young people in a difficult financial climate and adding new things while you're doing it. It's incredible. I have a question about what's going on between community colleges and New York State these days and the governor. Where does that stand? What's been, are they supportive? Are they threatening your cuts? I've heard headlines, but I haven't been able to really follow the stories. So give us a snapshot.
I guess part of my answer is I wish I knew. The governor has expressed, as you probably recall from his State of the State address, some pretty strong views, okay, about how community colleges have not lived up to what he thinks we should be doing. Graduation rates aren't what he thinks they should be. They aren't what we would like them to be. Okay. The challenge is, of course, as you'll see in some of our advocacy positions, is the broad range of clientele that we have to try to have prepared for graduation, and the whole story isn't in just the numbers. I'm always fond of trying to point out that all the numbers that get reported are addressed first-time full-time students. Well, I always use my example of our nursing students. Most of our nursing students, by the time they matriculate in the nursing program, have already had other coursework, usually under the general studies program or something, as pre-nursing, which is to say that our 60 graduates in nursing every year don't get counted in our graduate program, don't get counted in our graduation statistics. You take on top of that, if the students that have had college someplace else, or if they come to TC3, finish 30 or 40 credits and transfer to Cornell before they finish a degree with us, that's a dropout. Okay, that's a negative number for us. So, the statistics don't tell the whole story, but the published numbers, that's national data, it's compared across the country, and we get painted with the same paintbrush with everybody else. In some respects, I kind of sidestepped the issue that you're bringing up in terms of what seems to be going on with the governor's perception of community colleges, I'm not sure I completely understand. We obviously are trying to address that. We're trying to address it through getting strong legislative support, particularly with our funding for this year. He also wants us to be more accountable through the REDCs and forcing the community colleges within an REDC to collaborate more in, I think, some idea of trying to save money, okay, in terms of what we're doing to meet regional, local economic development needs. The challenge we have is that we're in two RDCs, so I don't go to Cortland in central New York, or do I go to, you have Tompkins County in the southern tier, and I got presidents of both those areas meeting with me for lunch down at Culturvary, which is where they want to have their meetings, and to talk about that. So, anyway, I'm not sure how that's all going to play out. I'm hoping that through the advocacy process here, as we lead up to the budget, that we can persuade the governor and some of his folks that we are doing a good job. But like I said here, you know, when we're still working with $168 less per FTE than we had 5 years ago, it's difficult to really meet all the needs and provide all the kinds of services that our students need. It's just, you know, we're still, quite likely, as we look at next year's budget, going to be having to look at staffing issues again. So it's tough.
Thank you. If it's not much consolation, I know, but you're in really good company. those whom the governor thinks aren't doing enough to cut our budgets to step up and do enough while he continues to cut our budgets.
Yeah. Thank you.
Increase our mandates.
Yeah, let's go to Martha Robertson next.
I would agree. Good way to put it, Carol. Thank you, Carl. Couple questions. The solar panels, once they're in gear, you probably have an estimate of how much that'll save you every year in energy costs?
The projection for this current year was $30,000. I doubt if we're going to hit that because it's getting early into the season. But that was what was assumed back when we thought we were going to have it up and running back in September. I can give you the projected over the lifetime of the 20-year lifetime of that. It's supposed to be saving something in the neighborhood of a couple million dollars over that 20-year period. So it is going to be saving money on an annual basis.
Great. That's fantastic. I think you said you were talking about the mentor program.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you said that two-thirds or three-quarters of the students had a 2.0 GPA. Is that right?
That's right. After the first semester, right?
Two out of four?
74%.
No.
Of the students that were...
2.0 out of a maximum 4.0.
Right.
So I guess, is that... I hate to say this, but is that good? That sounds kind of low, actually. I don't know.
Well, when you put it in the context that these are the highest risk, both academically and socioeconomically, so of students that come to the college... And you put it in the context of those that if they don't hit that 2.0, they wind up on probation. And the unfortunate statistic is that 75% of the students wind up on probation, usually the following semester is suspended. So, you know, so that first semester is a vital semester, okay, to getting students not only to stay at the college and if they have a successful first semester, their odds of completing are greatly enhanced. So that indeed is a pretty significant accomplishment.
Okay.
And again, I put it in the context of the academic and socioeconomic conditions in which those students are coming to us. Okay, they come with a lot of baggage. Okay, that the mentors who are second year students who have had that experience during the first year work with you. So it's a peer to peer kind of process, as well as closely overseen by professionals in the multicultural services area, as well as other counselors. So there's a lot of support. We're hoping really to see if we can figure out a way to ramp that program up, because it has had a lot of success.
Okay, I appreciate that context. Thank you very much. From one of your handouts here, I wanted to just, you mentioned the state aid is $168 less per FTE than 5 years ago. I like the way you said it. If the current rate had been adjusted, if the 2007-08 rate had been adjusted by the Higher Education Price Index over the same course of time, the current rate would now be approximately $3,105 per FTE instead of the existing less than $2,500. So it would be $3,100 instead of $2,500. That's really stunning.
If we had that kind of resource, we could be doing a lot more with programs like the mentoring program, like what we try to do with student success, like what we're doing with our academic advisement and success initiatives. These are all labor intensive. You know, you just can't. You can't apply technology to those kinds of initiatives and think you're going to make a difference in students' lives. And we just aren't able to do that for the reasons you just highlighted.
Okay, and if I can have just one other. I seem to remember last year you were saying that the governor's proposal was, his package, was going to require some really stringent rules, whatever, requirements that you show a student left TC3 and got this job. I mean, that you were, there was going to be some kind of very even tighter than ever mandates, restrictions on documenting that the graduates got jobs, or that when they left, whether they graduated or not, that they got jobs.
That was last year that we've been.
Okay. Where does that stand?
This year, the governor has proposed that the state aid that we received, and of course he's not proposing any increase, okay, in his budget, but that the state aid we do get, that 10% of our state aid be withheld, okay, until the SUNY Board of Trustees, not our local, but the SUNY Board of Trustees has approved a performance-based funding plan for the college. And that performance-based funding includes those kinds of data points that you're referring to, jobs, graduation rates, retention of students that come to us with developmental course needs and that sort of thing. So, like I said, I think one of our strengths, frankly, is our efforts at accountability. We've been held up as a model for that. Frankly, I'm not that concerned about that. I think we do well in terms of how we hold ourselves accountable. The challenges, I didn't get into a detail on that in my remarks, but the challenge we have is that every different agency has a different way that we have to report that kind of thing. So it really does get a little onerous in terms of the impact it has on our resources to have to keep on reporting all this stuff in some different way for some different agency. And, of course, what the governor is asking SUNY to do, to ask us to do, is yet one more different way of having to go about doing that. So that's the frustration. Middle states and state ed and you name it. I mean, we have data and reporting and all that kind of stuff that we have to do. So I'm not terribly concerned about that. I think we'll deliver on that one. But it's just the idea that, you know, they're dangling that over our heads before we get our money.
Peter Stein.
Thank you.
Oops. Wrong place. I had a question and then a recommendation. The question is, I'm really quite impressed with the new restaurant you've opened. I mean, it's far out the facility itself far outstrips anything else we have in this community. No question, it's the pleasantest restaurant to go into, and the food's pretty good also. But I had a question. Have you had a long any prior experience in agriculture, agricultural education, or culinary arts, or did you establish the program at the same time that you built the facility? I just wondered.
You talking about me personally, or
no? You being TC3.
TC3. Thank you.
You get all the blame and all the credit.
Yeah, right. I know how that works. I've been asked that question a similar question, I think, a number of times. You know, where'd this idea come from? And it came from, I'll characterize it as two different kinds of experiences that I had that kind of, if you pardon the pun, okay, we kind of laid the seedbed, I think, for what evolved to what you're referencing here with our Farm to Bistro initiative. One was an experience I had where attending a conference out in Iowa at a community college, a very large community college, Kirkwood Community College, and have a great deal of respect for the president there and what they've done. And of course, it's a very agricultural area. And they've actually built their own hotel on their campus. And in their hotel, they have their whole culinary center that looks a little bit like what what we have. There's elements of what we have over here that kind of came from that center that I saw out there, and they have an events or a conference center there where they do weddings and all that. So that, you know, and of course I've been hearing for a while about, you know, the need for a culinary program at the college, is a need in the community and all that kind of thing. And of course the faculty have been kind of pushing the idea, but we just didn't have any capacity on our campus to do that. So that was one experience that I had that said, boy, I wish we could kind of do something along that line. And then probably 4 or 5 years ago, I forgot which, but I was, we were offering a course at TC3 out of West Haven Farm through Johanna Green's program. And it was a 6-credit course, and it really was a very hands-on kind of farming, learning farming techniques and food distribution. And it was real engaging kind of course, and I was asked to speak at the end of that course in their kind of wrap-up seminar, I think it was. And so at the end of that, in the Q&A session, I was asked, well, gee, why couldn't TC3 do something like this? Why couldn't this 6-credit course, you know, become a program and work with Cornell in terms of developing a curricula that would connect the two programs into a baccalaureate degree and all that sort of thing? And so that made sense, too, you know, and I had one faculty member at that time who was a real advocate for that idea as well. So anyway, one thing led to another over the next 2 or 3 years as I began to bring that group of faculty together. We started brainstorming ideas, and at the same time, I started working with the foundation because I was fairly certain I wasn't going to get any state capital money or local capital money to make it all happen anyplace. So we worked through the foundation to eventually get to the point where we have that today. Okay, we were able to get some grant money from the REDC, we got some private money, and then the rest, of course, is bank loans that we acquired and made it happen. So I don't know if that's directly answering your question, but that's kind of how the idea sort of evolved.
Okay, thanks. Now the suggestion. It occurred to me when I was listening to you speak, and you had certain complaints about how you go about assessing your performance when students graduate or don't graduate and so on and so forth. It occurred to me that, you know, at the different levels, all these educational institutions are different. It's a community college is not like a grade school. It's not like a high school. It's not like a Cornell. It's a thing of its own. And it would seem to me that you have to think very carefully as to what are the numbers that would show whether you're doing your job or not doing your job, and you can't automatically take them from those other places that already has them. And it would seem to me that that would be a good thing for the national organization. There must be a national organization, the national organization of anything in the United States. There must be a national organization, and it would be really helpful, I would think, if they could get together and design some kind of a assessment that could be used by any community college that takes into account the different goals that it has. You know, I was thinking I might come and take a couple of courses there, and then I would look like someone that failed because he didn't graduate or get any kind of a... you know what I mean. So.
It's a very interesting comment, and actually there is something underway along that line. And through the American Association of Community Colleges, okay, that national association, they've spent 2-3 years developing what they call the voluntary, I forget what the F stands for, but basically it's a voluntary assessment initiative, okay? And they've been going around the country getting the more community colleges they have to participate, and of course there's a fee to be able to join that. The more valid comparative kind of data that you can get to help inform your own institution. And they're really working hard at helping at making their metrics relevant to the kinds of issues that I was just talking about in terms of true measures of how we are doing in our community college sector, given some of the unique populations that we serve and so on. And what we're working hard, our community college presidents here in New York are working hard on, is trying to persuade our chancellor and, you know, even as a part of this performance-based funding that the governor has now possibly, if the legislature goes along, imposing, that VFA standards and metrics can be adopted by SUNY, so we don't have some third or fourth means reporting process that we have to go through. They can just simply take what we're already reporting with this AACC or VFA project. So there is something underway with that. I'm hoping that it'll be another couple of years before we really see data coming out of that I think will give us feedback. But that is in the works. So I'm encouraged by that, actually.
Dooley, then Dan, then let's see if we can't come to a conclusion on this. The weather's not so great out there. Dooley?
You did not mention anything about the situation for your adjuncts on campus, and if you choose to give us an update on where things stand, that would be interesting. But I couldn't contain myself. I wanted to ask you one specific thing.
Mm-hmm.
Last Wednesday at noontime was the National Walkout Day for adjuncts all over this country. Was there any activity of that sort on your campus?
No, not that I'm aware of.
Well, you were lucky. Good for you.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. With respect to the adjunct, I that's going through the usual process with PERB and all that. The only comment I would just make is that, as I think everyone here knows, is that we've had a very long history, I'll say 20 years at least, of a very collaborative and favorable labor management relationship with all of our, we have three unions, our faculty, our administrators, and our classified staff. And, this too will work out one way or another, and we will have some kind of favorable working relationship going forward in whatever fashion PERB judges is appropriate. So, we're just waiting now for that process to play itself out, and when it does, we'll go forward.
Have any idea when that might be?
There was a conference on the 17th, and in that conference there was a hearing, I think they call it. They have these different labels for meetings, before the administrative judge, I guess, that's a PERB person, in May sometime, I think. So there's an opportunity between that for, informal discussions to occur. But at this point, we haven't been approached by anything along that line.
Thank you.
Dan.
My question got asked, so I'll pass. Thanks.
All right. Carl, thank you very much for coming tonight. And we are very concerned about what happens at the legislature, state legislature. And I would certainly be pleased if our Government Operations Committee would, or our Budget Committee would take a look at whether we ought to pass a resolution and send on to the governor and to the state legislators regarding that.
I will say that the one pager that I passed out here tonight was prepared a couple of months ago. There's another one that is supposed to be ready tomorrow. And maybe I'll make an effort to get that down here to you all as well. It overlaps a little bit, but there's some additional, I think, good information in that as well. So if you're going to prepare a resolution or letter writing or anything, that'll give you a little bit more information. But also I would make myself available to answer questions or any help you might need in that initiative. That would be greatly appreciated. I think we can use all the help we can get in telling our story this year.
Thank you. Last year, I know that the colleges thought that they were going to have a little better result of the state aid formula after it got to the legislature, but it didn't happen.
Yeah, last year was a big disappointment. No doubt about it.
Thank you very much.
Thank you all for your time and your attention and your questions. Appreciate it.
For Chair's report, I would just mention that we had a delegation that met with our State Assemblywoman, Barbara Lifton, last week. We talked about a number of issues. Heading the list, of course, was the issue of the unfunded mandate, particularly Medicaid, and the need for changes there. But we also talked about a number of other items. Thanks to our county administrator for putting together some paper that we were able to give to the Assemblywoman about that. She was listened intently and was very favorable to a lot of the positions that we recommended. We will be talking next to one of our state senators, Tom O'Mara, and that's March something. I forgot what date we're going to be doing that, but that'll be happening. If others have any ideas for topics that ought to come forward at that meeting, we're glad to have them from you. I have a couple of chair's appointments. Pleased to appoint our poet laureate, John Jack Hopper, we heard from earlier. I neglected to add Dan Klein to the Special Negotiating Committee last meeting and want to make sure we do that again. He's been serving very efficiently in that position already. And I made a boo-boo last time, and it's my mea culpa, and that is I made an appointment to the Tompkins County Area Development, in that case, Jim Dennis, as chair of the IDA. I was later informed that it's under TCAD bylaws that we are restricted, so the second person needs to be the chair of the committee, which overlooks economic development. So I'm pleased to appoint Martha Robertson as chair of Economic Development Committee to that this time.
Are you looking through the these list of advisory board appointments yet or not? There's just one typo, so I. That's not yet. That's not what you.
We haven't got quite that far.
Thank you.
Let's move to reports by the county administrator, Joe Mariana.
Thank you, Mike. I just have one item tonight, and I'm going to be very brief on it. You recall when the state budget was first proposed, and in fact, I think before the state budget was proposed, the governor had come forward with a circuit breaker proposal. At that time, soon after it was released, we talked about what we thought was in that proposal and how we thought that may affect local taxpayers and county government, in fact, all local governments. And at that time, had a pretty good discussion on the floor of the legislature about some of those concerns, some thoughts about how the money could be better applied for mandate relief to result in more sustainable and broad-based tax relief. But we said at that time there was still a lot of things about the proposal we didn't know. So I've been promising the legislature that when the fog lifts, we will try to provide additional information about some of the details of the circuit breaker plan. And you have a memo in front of you tonight that tries to touch on some of those details. I'm not going to go through it tonight. I would hope you'd have a chance to take a look at it, digest it. Maybe at your next meeting we can go through some of those details. I will tell you only that in this memo we've tried to touch on some of the key elements of a fairly complex plan, but hit the basic things like who is eligible, what counts toward the 6% income threshold. That's a magic number, as you recall, where if your property taxes exceed 6% of your income, you might be in line for some of that money to be returned to you in the form of an income tax credit. We've talked about that. We talk a bit more about the value of the credit, how much money might it mean at the various income levels and at the various years of the phased-in approach. We didn't realize when this first came out, this is going to take 4 years before it's fully phased in, beginning in 2015 with school taxes. So in the memo, we talk about that. What might this mean? How much might it be worth to homeowners in the community and renters? There's a brief section on who might benefit most, and we talked about that when we first had a conversation about this. It basically assists those with high home values and low incomes. It's a direct relationship that is at play here. It is more beneficial downstate than it is upstate. Long Island is the big winner. Much more so than upstate. There are some concerns articulated in here about what if. What if we go through a recession? What if we go through a period of inflation? What if the state peels back aid? What if these circumstances happen that happen? These are the things that we deal with all the time. What happens in the ordinary course of those events if we have a hard cap, and if the penalty for not being able to reach that cap is the denial of an income tax credit to people who might be suffering through a recession. What if? So we talk about some of those things. And lastly, in here is a section on some recommendations, not new to us at all. In fact, we talked about it last time. In here it says that if the state has $1.66 billion to spend for property tax relief, that money is better spent to relieve counties of the burden of those mandated costs, those state costs that have been shifted to counties. And if that's done, and we did a little arithmetic over the last day or two, if they could just take $1.66 billion off the backs of counties, that means that county property taxes in New York State would drop by a third overnight. That's what would happen if $1.66 billion was taken out of county budgets and tax levies and put where it should be, which is in the state budget. It would be an across-the-board 33 1/3% decrease in county taxes. So the recommendation to apply the money, to redirect money that apparently is there, redirect the money for mandate relief, meaningful mandate relief, is also a part of this memo. So that's kind of a teaser for the full document. You'll find parts of it maybe a little bit boring and mind-numbing in its numbers. But again, we felt that when the fog lifts and we have a good sense of how this is going to work, we ought to start talking to you about that and talking to the state as well. So that's what's in the memo that's on your desk tonight. And that's my report.
Questions for Joe. Martha?
Well, I would note for the public, it goes on to the fifth page. So this is not a simple explanation. You know, the governor is so good at... By the way, I hope the media in the room have this. I noted the editorial saying the property tax cap is good and should be made permanent. The governor is so good at developing quid pro quos. Why don't they just... And I understand... I heard this articulated, maybe I can't remember who said it, so I heard it articulated that they're worried that if they took over Medicaid, we would just use the money, we wouldn't drop the taxes, we use the money for other things. Oh, spendthrift stuff like fixing roads and bridges. But okay. So they're so good at these quid pro quos. What if they just said, look, we'll take your Medicaid burden if and only if you've dropped the property tax levy by the same amount. I think that'd be real doable. And I don't know if that specific conversation could get into our lobbying with Amara and anybody else. I mean, I think that's probably the unsaid thing out there. It's real easy to solve that. Seems a no-brainer. Thanks for doing this, Joe.
Martha, we actually made that point with Barbara Lifton, and it's a very good one. And very at one point in the past, there was a suggestion of giving up 1% of sales tax in return for relief on the Medicaid. Probably a decade ago, that was talked about. But you're exactly right. It doesn't necessarily mean that the municipalities are going to go crazy if Medicaid relief comes forward.
They could specifically structure it so you get that relief only if there's an equivalent cut.
I got Peter, then Will, then Carol.
This whole argument about mandate relief, I find it always hard to understand. Where in the world is this governor's 1.6 billion or trillion or whatever it is dollars coming from? I mean, first I thought it was coming from the fines that but that's not it.
No.
So they got another source of income that we never heard of before. What's that?
It's the expectation of ongoing recurring revenue. So you're right to recall that there was a windfall from some bank settlements, but that's kind of in a different bucket. So okay. Talking about spending part of that for Tappan Zee and rail lines and so forth. Put that over here. The state has an expectation, as it does its budget projections, that it will have extra money in the future that it doesn't have today. So that's why this ramps up. So they're projecting.
Where's that coming from? Do you know?
I would assume income taxes, just normal revenues, as they project out. So they're projecting their expenditures, and they're trying to contain their own expenditure growth, and they're projecting revenues. And over the next 3 or 4 years, they believe that they will have the capacity to apply essentially new money from recurring revenues to pay for this credit. Which, again, is our point. If you've got it, okay, it's better spent on some of these mandates.
Will?
I couldn't agree more, and you've made an excellent case. And Martha, I think your analysis is right. Why doesn't he do it? And I think the obvious answer is that he loves having a whipping boy in the form of local government. If he were simply to pass this on and allow us to really make the changes we know, he wouldn't be getting the credit, but we would be perceived well. I sort of understand that happening. My great disappointment is that our local media has not quite grasped that dynamic, and I really would hope that they would begin to take a deeper look.
Carol?
Yeah, Mike, you mentioned the meeting we had with Barbara Lifton, and I was sorry I had to leave early, but it was a really nice packet of information that you and Joe put together, and in particular on the mandates and on the Medicaid portion of county budgets. You put together a chart that you didn't include here in this one. What percentage of the local county property tax bill is Medicaid? And the numbers were really astounding. We're in better shape than most, and we're struggling with it. But there were counties that 80, 90, what was one of them, 93%?
High 90s. Mm-hmm.
High 90s% of their budget, of their local county property tax budget, was going to Medicaid. I mean, how do they? Does that mean they do nothing else for their residents? It's just astounding. And think of what we could all be doing on the local level if the state did what all the other states do. So that might be helpful to distribute to make sure that we all get.
I will.
And then since I have the floor and I'm mentioning that meeting, Barbara Lifton pointed us to, in an answer to something, she pointed us to this year's Fiscal Policy Institute for 2014-2015 report. She had one piece of information she was reading from it. I think it was about buses, rural buses, maybe. It's just the link is now online and you can get to it. And I'm hoping that somebody can send that out to us electronically so we can all read it. Thanks.
Dooley?
Joe, I look forward to reading your handout. I was sorry, though, to see that you adopted without question the name of this thing as a circuit breaker. It's not what people usually think of as a circuit breaker. He's co-opted that term and redefined it this way. So if you do a new version of this, I hope you will include that little factoid also. And, Will, I think that the journal editorial was specific really to schools and not to county government for a change.
Another bad story, actually, but yes.
Can we move then next to our county attorney, Jonathan Wood?
I have no report.
Any questions for John? Then let's go to Finance Director Rick Snyder.
Thank you. I'd like for you to turn in your packets to the sales tax distribution summary, because tonight we're going to be looking at just our first month of activity for January 2015. And as we look at the report, and if you go to the column at the top that says percent change, we're going to be comparing January of this year to January of last year. We show a percent change of 10.35% increase, which seems to be a phenomenal increase. But I caution you, and I spoke with Joe earlier before this meeting about it, that last year our January receipts were about 10% lower than the year before that. So there's a lot of activity or volatility, the great aberration in the month of January. We don't seem to get very sound numbers during the first 2 months of the year in January and February. So when you look at this, we'll take it with a grain of salt. A, it's just 1 month into the year, and it's too early to tell if this – I mean, there's nothing to project for you. There's really no projection that can be made from just one number. But if you go back 2 years, we're more on track with sales tax for January of 2013 than we are with comparing it to January 2014. My next comment is if you move over to the year-to-date column into the second section, the county section, I'd like to remark that the year-to-date distributions for the county's portion total $2,610,882 compared to $2,365,983 in 2014. This represents an increase of $244,899 year over year, or 10.35% increase. The only other comment I'll make is when we look at this as a budget perspective, and we are into a new budget year at this time, normally, with just 1 month, we should be at 8.3% of our budget, but collections at this point in time are 7.8%. So at this point in time, we're about 0.5% under budget. And that's all for the January sales tax report.
Questions for Rick? Thanks, Rick.
I want to know if you're claiming full credit for how well we're doing so far this year.
Yes, I did spend a lot from Christmas right up today to take full credit.
I don't think we have a report from county staff tonight. Let's call for resolutions to be added or withdrawn from the agenda. Dave McKenna.
I'm going to pull Resolution E to a future date.
Okay. Resolution E is withdrawn. Martha?
And I'd like to pull Resolution G about the economic development strategy. Martha Armstrong is going to make a presentation at the March 17th legislature meeting, at our next legislature meeting, about the ED strategy, and we thought a legislature vote after that would be far better than a vote before the presentation.
Okay, Resolution G is withdrawn. Carol?
Just a very quick correction, because I know we moved the advisory board appointments at the same time as the consent agenda. The Homeownership Oversight Committee, you list proposed appointment, and that person is on the Planning Committee and Chair of the Economic Development Committee. It's a Planning Committee appointment, actually the Planning Chair appointment, but Martha's doing it
as a member of the Planning Committee. Yeah.
Yeah, but typically the seat either goes to the Planning Committee Chair or the person they call into duty on our behalf.
Well, I have to admit to being a little confused. What are we doing now?
The Homeownership Oversight Committee,
right.
The third one under Planning, Energy, and Environmental Quality Committee. Martha Robertson is correct as the appointee.
Okay.
But Martha is not the Planning Committee chair. She is Planning Committee.
Member of the committee.
Yes.
Gotcha. Okay. Mike, did you have your hand up?
Yeah, I just would like to add Resolution M to the agenda.
Oh. Resolution M. Can you read the title?
Sure. It's authorizing pay above the assigned grade for the public health director on an interim basis.
Is there a second to add that to the agenda? Seconded by Dave McKenna. Discussion? Ready to vote on that? All in favor of adding that to the agenda, please raise your hand. Those opposed? That's unanimous. That's added to the agenda. Carol?
Yeah. So, and then on the comprehensive plan, I thought that we have here a proposed amendment and little new section of the plan, and I have a question for the chair of the committee, maybe.
I think that may come up under planning.
Well, no, it's just I thought that we authorized Ed and Dooley to take what we discussed at committee, and we sort of pre-authorized this change already to, as being the one that we wanted to come out of committee. So that's, I'm happy either way. I'll move it if we don't do it ahead.
I went over the procedure with our legislative clerk, and it will be a substitute, and I'll be happy to have you move it. Anybody can move it.
Yeah, let's just follow it on the committee report and the resolution. Okay, let's move to the consent agenda. Appointments we have out of Planning, Energy, and Environmental Quality Committee, from the Fish and, to the Fish and Wildlife Management Board, Carol Chalk, to the Water Resources Council, Dooley Kiefer and William George, to the Home Ownership Oversight Committee, Martha Robertson, to the Housing Affordability Program and Housing Trust Program Oversight Committee, Martha Robertson, out of the Government Operations Committee, to the Ethics Advisory Board, Dooley Kiefer, to the Budget Capital, from the Budget Capital and Personnel Committee, to the Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee, Deb Prato. And we have some resolutions on the consent agenda. Resolution A, to amend, this is for Government Operations Committee, to amend Resolution Number 2014-17 of February 6, 2014, determination and certification of county clerk's allowance, the annual expenses for administering the mortgage tax. Resolution B, approval of a...
Off.
Resolution C, adoption of the list of designated officers and employees required to file an annual financial disclosure. Out of the Budget, Capital, and Personnel Committee, Resolution D, delegation of authority to authorize certain tax and solid waste fee refunds under $500. Do I get a motion on the consent agenda? Dooley Kiefer, seconded by Martha Robertson. Ready to vote? All those in favor, please raise your hand. Those opposed, that's unanimous. I'd like to go next to the Planning, Energy, and Environmental Quality Committee. We have some staff here, and I think it would be courteous to them. So Dooley Kiefer is our chair. Dooley?
Thank you, Mike. I was going to ask you to do that, and you did it all on your own, so thanks very much.
I'm learning.
The first resolution to deal with is Resolution I, making a negative declaration of environmental significance in relation to Resolution Number Something of 2015, adoption of the 2015 Tompkins County Comprehensive Plan. This is ID 5305. I move it.
Is there a second? Seconded by Martha Robertson. Discussion? Dooley? Want to mention anything?
No, I have no idea if anybody made an effort to look at it, but it was completed last year, and it needs to be adopted so we can get on with the plan.
You ready to move that, or rather to vote on that, rather? All those in favor, please raise your hand. Those opposed, that's unanimous.
Thank you. So the other one, of course, it's not in front of me. It's Resolution J, and the resolution that came out of committee is on packet page 22, and I will move that.
Is there a second? Seconded by Carol Chalk. Carol Chalk.
Yeah, so I'd just like to amend it, to offer the proposed amendment. It's in your packets. Resolution J, it looks like this, and there's both the just an added whereas. I can read it if you'd like. And then there's at the very beginning section of the plan, the value of a comprehensive plan, there was half of two different, one and a half sentences added, and it was out of discussion in committee, responding first to public comments, and about why don't we see social services mentioned in here, and the other was just clarifying what, just adding wording. We had 20 years for the plan. I think Mike Sigler had offered it when he was on the committee, and just adding the word 20-year horizon, just clarifying what that is. And it came out of discussion, and I thought we'd authorized Julie to just work on and Ed to come with proposed wording from discussion.
So
Is it friendly?
Yes. Oh, well, it's certainly friendly
to the seconder. I assume
yes.
It is.
Yes.
Okay, then as with that friendly amendment.
So before we vote on that, there is a slight additional change in the actual wording of the plan itself, and that was in your red folder. It's a page with not much print on it called Proposed Amendment to the Comprehensive Plan by Legislator Kiefer. That's what, in part, Carol was describing as something that had been discussed at committee. But to formalize it, we had to have actual language to amend what is part of the introduction of the comprehensive plan. It's on page 3. It's online now under the section called The Value of a Comprehensive Plan. And the inserted words are what is underlined on the page in your red folder. I can read the whole thing if you'd like, so the public knows what we're saying. I'll read the whole paragraph. One of the duties of the planning department, according to the county charter, is to prepare a comprehensive plan for the development of the county, including those topics authorized by New York State law, which deal with the, quote, protection, enhancement, orderly growth, and development of the county, end quote. This is the new language. Accordingly, the plan focuses on the physical and natural environment and not on human services concerns. The comprehensive plan was initiated using a 20-year horizon to determine what issues need to be addressed and then goes on with the language that's already there, and will be monitored annually, updated as necessary, and formally reviewed every 5 years in accordance with the county charter. The content of the plan was developed from issues citizens identified as critical. It describes existing conditions and identifies issues and opportunities that can inform decision makers at all levels of government, as well as individuals, businesses, educational institutions, and not-for-profit organizations as they plan for the future of Tompkins County. And I want to point out that this is not substantive change. It would not require an additional public hearing. It is simply clarifying and making more transparent how this came to be developed.
Does someone want to move this as an amendment?
So I hope someone will move it. I would like to move it if I can.
Well, it's your resolution. If someone else could move it, I think
this is a resolution to amend the plan itself,
right.
not the resolution.
But you moved the adoption of the plan, right? Or the comprehensive plan.
Yes, but that's suspended while we talk about the plan itself.
Point of information, I believe, I thought that it was part of what I already moved and amended and was accepted as friendly, because the whereas in the proposed amendment refers to this clarifying language, and this was attached to it. So I think that we've already done it, but I'm happy to do it again.
Well, let's...
Okay.
Let's double reinforce it here. All right, Dooley, if you want to move it, we'll let you.
Well, I would like to. I hope someone will second it.
Second. Seconded by Dan. Discussion. Carol?
Yes, I just want to point out for benefit of the public that this in no way means that the county doesn't do human services planning. What the nature of the discussion was, we realized we had gotten a bunch of comments about, how come you're talking about a comprehensive plan for the county, how come people aren't in it as much as the built and natural environments? And the answer was that we would, as part of this document, we would really be stepping on the toes of other committees and other departments you know, our health department does its plan, and it's our human services departments, social services departments do its their plans, and so that's not it's just not what the state enabling legislation allows us to do with this document, and it doesn't mean that we don't do that kind of planning as well.
Any other comments on the amendment? Dooley?
I would like to give Commissioner Marks a chance to comment if he wants to.
And Marks, he's shaking his head. That doesn't sound like he feels he needs to comment.
Okay, thank you. I actually feel a need, unfortunately, to say that my understanding of the state language that is referred to here is that it lists a bunch of topics that it recommends comprehensive plans include. It doesn't forbid you from doing other things, too. And there's nothing in my understanding that says a comprehensive plan could not discuss things that affect the residents of the county beyond the physical and natural environment. For example, if mental health issues were a public safety concern and the plan could make any suggestions in that area or anything that doesn't contradict any of our other departments, but it's not forbidden from mentioning things. So my understanding is a little different from yours, Carol, but it doesn't affect this at all, what we're doing here.
Carol?
Now, I was the first person, I think, or among the first and the loudest voices to say, hey, how come we don't have that in here? And I've accepted the explanation. I would be happy to have us stop and you make our planning department do another 2 years of work putting that in. But I think the appropriate place, we'd have had to have given that instruction, and I think that we'd have had to engage in a different kind of process that yes. involved the heads of those departments as well in order to do it. I think that's what I've got convinced along the way. So that's where I stand on it. And I think that I'll take this opportunity to say, boy, it's been a two-year process. Ed, Joan, Katie, the rest of the staff of the planning department did a lot of work. Had, correct my number if I'm wrong, 34, 45, 85 meetings.
We're still talking about the amendment.
So anyway, I just think that they really consulted with the community and responded. So I'm happy. I appreciate what they did, and I hope that we'll approve this amendment.
Are we ready to vote on the amendment? All those in favor, please raise your hand. Those opposed? That's unanimous.
Thank you all.
Now we're back to the resolution to adopt the comprehensive plan as amended. Any comments at this point? Carol? Okay. I'd like to add the comprehensive plan is always a difficult process. I think we had an excellent effort, first of all, by our Planning and Environmental Quality Committee to initiate the update, and then certainly carried forward by our planning department. Our planning commissioner, Ed Marks, our deputy commissioner, Katie Borgella, and all the people in that department that worked so hard on this. It's not easy trying to bring together so many different ideas across the community. But they, as Carol, as you said, they went out to the community and sought comments on this. They tried to move this forward for this update into our 21st century thinking, and I think they served us well. Mike Sigler.
I feel like I need to say why I'm going to vote against this. And it's not, I really do appreciate the planning department's work on this. They have done everything they were tasked to do by this legislature. The legislature said, this is what we want, and they did everything that was necessary. I mean, they went and they got the public input. They got the input from this legislature. They followed the guidelines. We said, we want X. They went and figured out how to do X. My problem, I guess, with it is somebody brought this up to my attention, and I thought this was interesting, was that they felt that it was very focused on the city. I don't know if that's necessarily true. However, I'm getting feedback from people in my town
that are saying, you know, it's wonderful that the city of Ithaca people pay a third for natural gas to heat their homes, and I'm paying more, a lot more, to heat my home because I can't get natural gas because your county legislature is against increasing natural gas infrastructure. That's what I'm hearing. It's that the city already has the infrastructure. So, yeah, why not vote to do X or do Y? Because they're frankly not going to have to do anything. Whereas the weight of this is going to be borne on the people that don't have that infrastructure yet. And frankly now, probably aren't going to get it because a lot of the groups that we thought would put this stuff in aren't going to do it. I mean, I remember when I was on the legislature the last time, a lot of people said, you know, Lansing, they don't want affordable housing, you know. So I don't know why they don't want it or whatever. I don't know how you're going to put affordable housing in Lansing. If you're just not going to have the infrastructure there because a lot of people who are supporting the comprehensive plan are saying, well, look, this energy roadmap says X. We're not going to be putting in any infrastructure. I don't know how you're going to put in affordable housing without that infrastructure. So, yeah, I mean, I find it to be an interesting problem that we're going to have going forward, that the city's out of space. I don't know where we're going to put all this housing that we need because we're not going to put in infrastructure if it is related in any way to natural gas. So I guess that's my problem. But so that's why I'm voting against it. I'm not voting against it because the planning department did anything it wasn't tasked to do. It did everything, literally everything. And there was a lot of hard work put into it. And it reads great. I just don't know how to overcome that for the people that I represent. You know, if it was just as the county as a whole, then yeah, it might be fine. But I don't vote for things that way. I mean, we're going to come and vote on Pine Tree in a little bit. And I'm voting for it. It doesn't really benefit the people in Lansing, but it's the right thing to do because it's a crappy road. So that's where I'm at. Okay, so thanks.
Martha Roberts.
Well, thanks for saying you'll vote for the Pine Tree Road project.
That was the resolution that Dave withdrew tonight. Right.
Well, we will be. Maybe we could put it back.
It'll be back
when it's time. It'll be back. The issue of infrastructure. It's now a couple of years ago. Martha Armstrong from TCAD did a very exhaustive survey of water and sewer infrastructure. Now, it wasn't energy, so I'll come to that in a second. But water and sewer infrastructure and capacity in the county. And then sort of mapped it out and then kind of looked at how many housing units we, you know, have said in our previous needs assessment that we needed. And long, long story short, came to the conclusion that we could supply, we could build the housing units that we need with existing water and sewer infrastructure. We didn't have to see additional sprawl. We didn't have to see the inefficient use of public dollars to extend infrastructure, again, for water and sewer. If municipalities really committed to densifying where infrastructure already exists, I believe that's true for energy as well, and I believe we have shown, for example, with our own Climate Smart Communities project, we've shown that you can build housing basically without fossil fuels. It takes a little more creativity. It might take, you know, making sure that certain construction is done a certain way. It might take people... It does take people thinking outside the box. I think that's what we all have to really get used to doing, is thinking outside the box. So I applaud the town of Lansing's interest in, you know, for example, being the only other municipality than the city to have a sort of density program at the IDA, a program that says we want to encourage denser development and create a village center, basically, kind of around the town hall and Rogues Harbor. So I think there's a lot of, you know, I'm really glad that there's, or at least in the past, has been that impetus. I think we have to challenge ourselves to figure out how to do this without just going back to the same old well, fossil fuel well. I think there are ways to do it. I think there are ways. There are tremendous opportunities coming through right now with the REV, with the reforming the energy vision from the PSC, with, you know, all sorts of different prizes, grant possibilities that the state is putting out there. So, I think builders have started to respond as well. So, you know, I understand your concern. I know you're hearing, I'm sure you're hearing this from folks. I think that we have to look past what we've done in the past and really push ourselves to do something different. So just want to explain what one of the things that I find very important about this comprehensive plan, that it does make us look out, you know, look beyond what we've done in the past.
Carol?
Yeah, I would urge you to reconsider, Mike, because but this document is 185 pages, if you count the introduction. I've got 191 pages right here, and the section that you're referring to is about 2 pages of the whole thing, and much more in it. Just looking at the table of contents are on agriculture and support. I mean, boy, the you just pointed out the other day at economic development that the biggest town and bucks and need for to support agricultural development is in Lansing. Water protection, nodal support that Martha pointed out, defensive stream crossings, regional cooperation. Fiscal responsibility, new section, never done before in our plan on fiscal responsibility that could have been written by you and the Republican Party platform. Let's not make our vision bigger than the dollars we've got to support it. Is in essence what it's saying. So the section you're pointing to, that where Ed is saying let's have a community conversation that goes into the future. He's not saying I don't think we've made any decisions yet. I was upset that we weren't going in and making some firm decisions about what kind of particular fossil fuel development we would or wouldn't have, and it doesn't do that. So we really compromised a lot, and the time frame. I know planning is not your favorite activity, but, you know, so we put a longer time horizon on it before we have to go do it again. And so it's just, I just think that I was hoping that we'd have gained your support. And, if you could reconsider, just because it's
okay,
2 pages out of all of it, and we don't all support any of it, we all have to make compromises.
Thanks,
so
Carol.
Please consider.
Any other comments before we proceed to a vote? Dooley Kiefer.
Mike, I think I heard you say the comprehensive plan may be good for the county, but it bothers you with respect to this one issue in Lansing. Mm-hmm. And to the extent that it's good for the county, I wish you would vote for it, because it's the plan for the whole county. I don't find it particularly city-centric, but you do, and that's your privilege.
Mike?
No, it's wonderful that we put out this plan, but I don't see your specific towns stepping up and saying, you know what, you're right, Martha, we can build without using fossil fuels, so you know what, we're going to put that in our code. We're going to do a zero emissions building code, and that way anybody who wants to build in our town, it has to be zero emissions. And you know what? If you want to sell a home, we're going to make you do that too, or put that price tag in. That would be really bad. But
I don't see anybody really breaching that topic. I hear a lot of people throwing stones in my town saying, hey, you guys shouldn't be using fossil fuels. But I don't hear that about, you know, Carroll's area of the city. I don't hear that from City Hall. I don't see that at the Dryden Town Board meeting. No, just Dryden, just Lansing. That's what I see. And that's my problem with it. Again, this is not a slam on the planning department. I like planning. My big problem is most of the planning is done at the town. It's not really a problem. I mean, that's where the power is. They have the planning boards. They are the ones that are doing this. So when you say I'm against planning, I'm like, not that I'm against it. It's somebody else's job. I mean, it's not our, we can plan as a, like a council of governments kind of thing, and we can give guidance. I mean, I called the planning board for information this week about watersheds. Yeah, that's the kind of stuff we can do. But again, I don't slam the planning department at all for this. They've done an excellent job. It is. I mean, 95% of it's great, but it's that 5% that is aggravating, frankly.
Do you need to speak again, Martha?
Yeah, I would. I hope that I think some towns are working on more energy friendly codes. That might be a good topic for TCOG. So, do what you have to do.
I'd like to move to a vote, please, on the resolution as amended, and I'd like to ask for a roll call vote, please.
Ms. Keeper?
Yes.
Mr. Klein?
Yes.
Mr. McKenna?
No.
Ms. Robertson?
Yes.
Mr. Shinagawa?
Yes.
Mr. Sigler?
No.
Mr. Stein?
Yes.
Mr. Burbank?
Yes.
Ms. Chalk?
Yes.
Mr. Lane?
Yes. Does anyone want to change his or her vote? Please announce the result.
I have 8 ayes, 2 noes.
The resolution passes.
I have another resolution.
Yes, you do.
Do you want to go ahead with it or take a break?
No, it's not time for a break yet. Let's go ahead with the resolution and then any report you have, and we'll see what we go from there.
This is Resolution K, ID 5403A. Authorizing a contract with Tompkins County Soil and Water Conservation District to provide interim financial assistance to support the eradication of hydrilla in and around Cayuga Lake, and I move that.
Is there a second? Seconded by Dave McKenna. Discussion? Nathan?
It's been a while since I've been briefed on hydrilla. I mean, what's the current way that we eliminate or eradicate hydrilla? Is it still the digging it up stuff, or is there a new herbicide, or... And what is it these days?
It's the same chemicals that were used in the past, but there's a lot of monitoring that goes on to identify where the problems are. And
there's also a certain amount of hand labor pulling it.
Right, yeah, that's what
shallow,
I thought.
In shallow areas.
So it really hasn't changed from
it's,
those
It's pretty much the same process.
Yeah. All right.
Martha?
I couldn't help but notice that Joan was about to leave and she stopped.
She's trying
I'm
to go again.
Guessing she has something to say.
Just in case someone wasn't able to answer the question. Just in case someone else wasn't able to answer the question. I don't have anything to add.
If you want to describe the program, it's fine, but I don't know how much Nate needs to know.
No, I was just curious if anything had changed from when we last talked about it.
I don't think we have an app for it yet.
Yeah.
Carol?
Yeah. I think when we started the whole process, the sense was that if we got in there immediately, we might be able to nip it 100% in the bud. And I don't think we've been quite gotten there. But the sense is that we now have a plan that we are still hoping to get it nipped entirely in the bud, but it's going to take a little bit longer, and that we spent higher levels at first to try to do that, and now it's lower levels. It's being supported by the state as well, and it's this isn't the only potential invasive species, that, you know, but this is the worst of them that has the potential to really choke, literally choke our waterways.
I'm glad it still says support the eradication rather than the maintenance of it. So,
can we, Martha?
Yeah, I just want to point out that this is money that we would front, that we put out there, and then it'll get reimbursed by the state.
It's in typical fashion. We have to put in for reimbursement after we, yeah, we're the bank, right?
Right, but it's important that, it, that you know, the public knows.
We will eventually get it back.
The state's been supportive, yeah.
This takes a short form roll call. Would you please call the roll?
Ms. Kiefer?
Yes.
Ms. Chalk?
Yes.
Are there any no's? That's unanimous. Julie, any report?
No. We'll have a regular meeting, but the agenda isn't set yet, so I can't tease you with any good things.
Okay. Then let's go back to the top of the agenda, Facilities and Infrastructure Committee. Dave McKenna is the chair.
Okay, F&I has not met since the last meeting. Our next meeting is Monday, March 9th at 3:30 here in these chambers. And I have one resolution to bring forward, Resolution F, Document ID 5386, authorization to execute a contract with CNS companies for road stabilization investigation services, Brooktondale Road, County Road 115, Town of Caroline. I so move.
That's seconded by Dan Klein. Discussion?
Which,
ready to vote?
This is Resolution F, is that right?
This
yes.
is F, yes.
There is, I had a change I wanted to suggest. I just have to find it. I'm sorry. Yes, the memo that's attached to the resolution describes this as both stabilization investigation and design services. So I believe the title should reflect that. It should say for road stabilization investigation and design services.
That's friendly.
Friendly to the seconder?
Yes.
Okay. Ready to vote as amended. All those in favor? Raise your hand. Those opposed? That's unanimous. Any questions for Dave before we move on? Martha, Economic Development Committee.
Thank you, Mike. I think you better keep people in their chairs if we have any other votes. I think we're getting thin here. We met yesterday, and a couple of items, and then I'll got one resolution. We heard from Julia Maddock of Workforce Development, and she was sort of updating us on something called the Workforce Innovation and Opportunities Act, which is replacing the Workforce Investment Act, which is what has been governing her work for, 15 years or so. This was passed and signed into law in this last summer after about 11 years after it was supposed to have been reauthorized. So it took them a long time to get to some kind of a bipartisan agreement on this bill. And again, this is the funding and the regulations that guide our workforce training money. Just a couple of highlights or some significant changes in the WIB, the Workforce Investment Board membership, and new requirements that are they're going to be put in place. But I would just point out that the law authorizes language for funding that would take funding for these programs, the workforce training programs, by 2017. The authorization would get it back to 2010 levels. We've been cutting workforce funding, training money, so much that it would take another several years before we could get back to 2010. And then she pointed out that that's the authorization, but it probably won't be appropriated at that level. So it could even be less than what we're talking about here. An issue coming up will be, do we want to continue as a single county WIB? And a number of other issues we're going to have to be looking at in the future. We heard from the Convention and Bureaus Convention and Visitors Bureau, which did their annual report in 2015 work plan, and treated us to a description of the We Surrender Winter Winds PR campaign, kind of the results that they got from this. And first off, what was the cost of this initiative? $400 to boost the Facebook post. Okay, that was the total cost. This has been in the planning for a number of years. It's been an idea floated out there for 8 or so years, but specific planning of how and when to do this. So it was not a sort of spontaneous idea. They have received, as a result, they got 434 broadcast stories to a Nielsen audience of nearly 55 million people, online news media and other news blog posts, another 649 stories with readership or impressions of 591 million people, and more than 150,000 visitors clicked on visitithaca.com, roughly 50 times the usual traffic. Now, that may seem, and then we've got a whole list of all the outlets that did interviews, you know, everywhere from South Africa to London to, you know, they all sorts of evidence of how popular this was. At any rate, what matters is 150,000 new clicks on visitithaca.com indicate people whose emails we now have. And targeted marketing will go out to those people, which we can guess is going to lead to significant benefits, significant increase in at least some proportion of those people showing up and spending money here. So at an investment of $400, people were pretty pleased, very, very pleased with what happened there. I mentioned that we pulled the economic development strategy from the approval today. We did vote to accept the ED strategy in committee. We had a presentation about it, questions and answers, and there's an interesting Ithaca Voice article on that online right now. I guess those are the main things, and we'll have a full discussion of the ED strategy at the next meeting.
So Martha, was Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me on the list?
Yeah, I heard it too. Yeah.
Martha, I think Martha Armstrong is going to be coming on the 7th of April.
Oh, April 7th. Okay.
So it'll be the meeting after next.
Got it. Okay. All right. Okay. If there are no other questions, then we've got...
We have Resolution H, please.
Right. There we go. Wrong packet. Sorry. This is the... tourism grants. Come on, where is it? What page is it, Kathy?
Page 16.
Okay, I was reading my ED packet. Award of 2000, resolution H5438, award of 2015 grants for arts and cultural organization, culture organizational development, community arts partnership. And I so move.
Is there a second? Seconded by Will.
This is the third year of a three-year grant process, and you can see the documentation of the organizations and the funds that were received. The STPB is committed to really thinking, and they've got a task force, and they've already been started thinking about how they might evaluate and revise this program for the next funding cycle. So they've got some interesting recommendations that are in your packet.
Ready to vote? All those in favor, please raise your hand. Those opposed? That's unanimous. Let's take our break, and let's come back in about 10 minutes, certainly by 20 of, and we'll go roll through the rest of the agenda. Thank you.
Is it still snowing out, like, really hard? I mean, would you mind pushing through if it is?
I can't tell you, answer that question for you. I'd like to take a few minutes. If you get back quicker than 10 minutes, we can get started quicker than 10 minutes. Next up is Dan Klein, who chairs our Government Operations Committee. Dan?
Thank you, Mike. Okay, so we had Resolution B pulled.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So I would like to move Resolution B, approval of appointments to the Tompkins County Council of Governments.
Is there a second? Seconded by Dave McKenna. Discussion? Martha?
Don't look at me cross-eyed, Joe. I've been here 13 years. And I think this is the first time I've ever pulled anything off consent. I just want to say. So, and I apologize for, like, not, like, focusing on this till last night, but, and then found out that I was going to go and call Glenn, but he's ill, and I don't think that's a great time to call somebody. So, I was just really surprised when I read that Glenn, who hasn't even been to two county legislature meetings, would be appointed to represent the county on the Council of Governments. So I've pulled this because I guess my intention is that we, when Glenn is well and when Jim is back, I'd like to ask that Jim be, you know, consider being the alternate. So folks know this appoints Mike Lane as the member and Glenn Morey would be the alternate member to TCOG. So I would, I know Glenn has attended TCOG meetings as the supervisor at the town of Groton, and I know he's resigned from this as supervisor as of February 17th or around there, but I just feel like this should be a county person, somebody who's well-versed in the history of county government, of our policies and procedures, maybe next year he'll be a great person for that position, but I think it's premature right now. So I will move to table this to the next legislature meeting and hope I get a second.
Seconded by Will.
Point of order.
Point of order, I'll take it.
You can't argue something and then move to table it. So she probably should move to postpone it.
Okay. I'll move. Should that be to the next meeting or just postpone it?
Whatever you want.
All right. I'll move to postpone till. I'll just move to postpone this resolution.
Is that all right with the seconder?
Sure.
Those would like to speak on postponement. I would. I made the suggestion of the appointment of myself as chair of the legislature to the Government Operations Committee for TCOG, Tompkins County Council of Government, and for Glenn Morey to be the alternate. The alternate is simply that. If the chair can't be there, the alternate serves. The Tompkins County Council of Government is an organization of all of our municipalities. Sometimes when people come on to the legislature, they have no experience in elected government whatsoever, and there's some of you around here that know that have come on. Glenn Morey was elected by the people in his district. He served, I think, 10 years on the Village of Groton Board and then served approximately that long as supervisor of the town of Groton. So he has some experience in local governments, which is what our Tompkins County Council of Governments is about. And it's not as though he's a neophyte. He's been attending these meetings as supervisor of the town of Groton. It makes him, in my view, a good choice. Also, Glenn has been appointed by me to two committees, so I think he has a little time, and I think working with the Council of Government from time to time is not overtaxing, and I think he can bring the matters that have to do with the county government forward Normally, the county administrator is there at those meetings as well. So I certainly would like to see this appointment done tonight, and I think it's fine the way it is. Anyone else want to speak to that? This is to the postponement. Carol.
I have no strong feeling. I didn't come in with any strong feelings one way or the other, and I think Glenn seems to really know what he's doing. Is he actually still serving as supervisor? So he.
I don't believe so.
But he was, and so I don't. I don't see any reason not to take another few weeks till he's here, so that we have a chance to think about this. I don't think there's a big rush since he's the alternate. I mean, can you not go to the next meeting? Do you know that there's a rush to do that personally?
But you're saying that. All right.
Yeah,
anyone else want to speak?
I'd be more comfortable hearing or having the chance at least to talk to him about, how confident he feels with whatever might come up and from the county perspective versus the Groton perspective. It's worth thinking about for a few weeks.
Martha?
I'm not saying it's certainly not personal in any way. It's certainly not partisan. It's simply he's been a representative of the town, which is valuable experience. And there are a lot of people around this table who had town positions first. But this is to represent the county. I just don't know. If he needs other work to do, he can certainly obviously go to TCOG meetings. But I think that it seems to me this is something that's worth. I take it seriously, the appointments that we make, and I'd like to. I don't know why Jim was not reappointed as the alternate, and I understand, Mike, that you are able to attend most of the meetings, but I just think it's a position that should be not represented by somebody who's still barely. I mean, I don't even have his phone number. It's that it's something where it should be somebody who can represent the county well, and I think it's a little too soon.
Any other comments? The motion is to postpone this to the next meeting.
Actually, the motion is to postpone. I didn't make it to a definite time in case he's not back or whatever. So,
well, a postponement, I think, would have to be to a definite time. I was assuming that's what you want. You want to pick
it
a
does.
Different time?
Okay, postpone to the next legislature meeting.
All those in favor of postponement, please raise your hand. 1, 2, 3. Those opposed? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 does not pass. So on the resolution, then, any comments, Martha?
I'd like my previous comments to be put in the record as the reasons I'm voting against this resolution.
All right. Anything else, Carol?
I'd like to move to table. I can't speak to it if I move to table.
I have a motion to table. Is there a second? Seconded by Martha. Ready to vote? All those in favor of tabling?
Can I speak to it or not?
Yes. I'm not sure you can speak to it. No. So we're just going to vote on whether to table this. That's indefinite. All those in favor, please raise your hand. That's 2. Those opposed? That's the rest. Back to the main motion. Are we ready to vote on that?
No.
Carol?
Yeah, so I'm just really uncomfortable with this. It hadn't even occurred to me. I think it's not fair to the guy to vote on this when he's not even in the room, when concerns have been raised and questions. So about whether he's even going to be comfortable representing the county in this way, this quickly. So I just, I don't know, I guess I'd be in favor of, if we have to vote on it tonight, and at this point we can't put it off, then I would pick somebody that we I'd ask the chair maybe to find somebody else.
We have the resolution on the floor at this point.
Who is in the room?
I assume that Glenn is comfortable because he must have said, I assume I cast
yes.
him. And so that's not the question. The question is, are we comfortable with somebody representing us? And I don't know, it's maybe not a big thing because it's not going to be that often, whatever. But the point is, does he even know the names of our department heads? This is silly, and I hate to vote against him when people are not, we're not willing to put this off for 2 weeks. I don't understand. But I'd like to move to replace the name Glenn Morey with Jim Dennis. Well, he's the vice chair of the legislature.
It's been moved as an amendment to replace one person with another, Dennis for Morey. Is there a second for that? Fails for lack of a second. Are we ready to vote on the main motion?
Well, so I have a question.
Nathan?
So has Jim expressed his interest to be the chief?
I spoke with Jim about this.
Okay.
Yes. He's okay with this.
He's okay with Glenn Morey?
He's okay with, right. He didn't need to do this.
It would be nice if Jim were here to say that as well.
Well, you're asking me. All I can do is say it was discussed.
Okay. Do we know if Jim would like to serve in this position?
I don't think so.
Another reason to wait until 2 weeks from now. What's the hurry? TCOG doesn't even meet until after our next legislature meeting.
Nathan, is your question answered or not?
Okay.
Anyone else want to speak?
Oh.
Nathan?
Yeah, so this appointment, though, it's not a chair's appointment. It's actually...
It's chair's recommendation to the committee. It's the committee's...
And then we appoint them for the term...
Resolution, and then the legislature either passes or debates the resolution as we're doing.
And we do it for a term of the year or until we decide to change it.
1 year. Yes, exactly. Is that right?
Until a successor is
appointed.
So if we found that Mr. Morey, our new legislator, is not representing the county well, we could take action to replace him, right?
We could always do that, yes.
Yeah.
I don't think we should be making assumptions.
I know. I'm just saying that it's not a... I don't see it as that is serious of an issue. But maybe I'm not seeing...
Thank you. Stuff. Peter.
Mike, I have a question. How many of the TCOG meetings did you miss last year?
I think one or two, possibly.
Okay. Thank you.
Oh. Are we ready to vote on the resolution? All those in... Wait a minute. We're on the main motion to pass the resolution. All those in favor, please raise your hand. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Those opposed? 1 opposed. Nathan, or not Nathan, Dan, anything else?
Yeah, I do have a report. And also, yes, while I have the mic, before I start my report, I just want to mention about the We Surrender to Winter campaign, which I'm a really big fan of. And now to hear that it's been sitting on the shelf for 8 years waiting for the right moment to unveil it, I like this even better. That is really good. Okay, so we met on February 24th, the Government Operations Committee did. We received an update from Jay Franklin, the Assessment Department, sort of an assessment, where they are at this point. Where he views assessment and development in the county at this point. It's a 12-page report, really detailed and thorough, and I really recommend reading it. It gives you a very excellent snapshot of where things are through the lens of assessment. We received another long, thorough report from the county administrator. It's only 9 pages, though, called Personal Goals and Priorities. It's also excellent reading. It gives another snapshot of what's going on in the county through a different lens, through things that Joe is involved in and or wants to initiate or strengthen. It's also worth taking a look at. Our county attorney presented a first look for us of the of a proposed law to legalize sparklers in Tompkins County. So this is something that New York State has enabled counties to enact if they choose. An interesting feature about this law is that it really limits when sparklers can be sold in the county. It would be, I think it's June 1st to July 5th and December 26th to January 2nd or something like that. So it's a very narrow window. But that is something that the county can decide to do or not. Our county attorney also presented a form that that grew out of something that happened at this meeting where a resident was asking for a specific service, and we asked Jonathan to follow up on this, and he's created a form called Request to Reduce or Eliminate Interest and or Penalties on Real Property Taxes. It's just a one-page document that someone can fill out if they are looking to have interest or penalties that they've had to pay refunded to them or forgiven. And it's a whole procedure they have to go through. They have to list what the fees are and what the benefit to the county is. That's the only reason that we would be enabled to give a refund or reduction in that way. We are going to meet next on March 24th. We'll be taking up the sparkler issue and probably setting a public hearing for that. We will be looking and discussing the idea of officially designated newspaper for county government, seeing if we're going to stay with what we have or explore other options. And we're going to be looking at the delicate topic of parking around the old jail, the courthouse, and this building, and seeing if we might make some changes in that. And that's my report.
Questions? Will?
Dan, excellent report. I really appreciated both the all you covered and the succinctness which you did it. I do have concerns about the sparklers, and I'm glad to know that that's on the agenda. I saw that we all got this handout, which is, I guess, you know, description of the kinds of things that we're talking about and a supposed fact sheet on how incredibly safe they are. It's not clear who the author of that fact sheet was. I would point out that one of the real concerns about sparklers is, while they, compared to most other such, you know, fireworky kind of devices, you know, don't explode and they're perceived to be safe, the actual tip is equivalent to basically a blowtorch. And they do pose a significant risk to very, very young children, precisely because parents frequently are not familiar or they think they're relatively benign. I would hope that the committee, before moving toward adoption, would seriously look at other sources in terms of health and safety issues, consider what, if we were to do this, what we can do in terms of public education, because there are many instances, I don't have the statistics in my hands, but of children who've been very horribly burned by these. They're not completely without problems. Thank you.
Dan?
So we definitely are open to hearing, you know, all sides of it. And just to be clear, it would be a local law, which means we'd be setting a public hearing, so it's going to come before us twice.
Okay. Thank you. Charter Review Committee will meet tomorrow here in these chambers at 3 o'clock p.m., and we'll be talking about those sections of the Charter, Article 16, having to do with the Sheriff's Office, Article 18, the County Clerk, and Article 17, the District Attorney. Answer any questions? Budget, Capital, and Personnel Committee, Mike Sigler is the Vice Chair.
Hi. So we had a meeting last Monday, February 23rd. We did get a report from Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee. I don't see the resolution anymore, but it's here somewhere. It was about keeping people in solitary confinement. It was a pretty long discussion that we had about that. There is some movement at the state level about trying to push, whereas no one will be held in solitary confinement over a certain period of time. And there's some concern, too, about, you know, who is in solitary confinement,
which peoples are put in there more often, and also how will that be handled for people who are in solitary confinement at, you know, maximum, supermax facilities. So that is the discussion we had on that. We also talked about the solid waste fee refunds, which was on the consent agenda. What else? Pine Tree Road was a pretty long discussion. You know, obviously passed out of commission or out of committee. That'll be brought up probably at the next meeting. What else? And the tax on firewood, you heard probably Jim Dennis on the radio about that. Very hard to split that out for people who want us to not tax firewood. It would seem, how do we not tax firewood and then we still tax things like heating oil and natural gas? So that is why it's very difficult to split that out. And there are people in the world that say we shouldn't be taxing any of those things, but that impact on county finances, the finance director would probably come to my house if we were to suggest something like that. So that is my report. Thanks.
Will?
Mike, I'm a little puzzled why the resolution or the issue of solitary confinement went through budget.
Because WDIC is under the
report. Said, okay, thank you. Thank you.
Mike, are we moving toward a date for the budget retreat, the annual budget retreat?
We are. I'm sorry. I just got an email on that. That is coming up. I actually already put it in my calendar. Sorry about that. Let me look it up real quick.
I'm getting a whisper from Kathy. It's March
20th.
April 27th.
And there'll be food. So
we'll all come.
And it is open to the public, if I recall, right?
Yes.
Let's have it a cultivari, just suggesting.
any other questions for Mike?
It's got a big meeting space.
Thank you, Mike.
No problem.
Oh, we'll be bringing up Resolution J.
Yeah.
Mike, can you move Resolution J?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, it's L. I'm sorry. It's L.
I'd like to move Resolution L, authorize a budget adjustment for the debt service fund to reallocate debt service payments due to restructuring and reissuance of debt in November 2014. Resulting in increases and decreases in revenue, decreases in certain principal and interest payments, and increases in other principal and interest payments within the 2015 Tompkins County budget. And I so move that.
Seconded by Dave McKenna. Discussion? Dooley?
I just wonder what the revenue is from Cortland.
I can answer that.
Rick?
We billed them for a portion of the TC3 bonds from years ago, and they make payment to us. And since we just refinanced those bonds, their payment went down to us.
Ready to vote? All those in favor, please raise your hand. Those opposed? That's unanimous. Mike, you also have Resolution M, which you added.
Oh, I was going to do that at... individual member filed the resolution, but I'll be happy to do
Let's
it
Let's do it. Let's okay. do it right now.
I'd like to move this individual member filed resolution, resolution number M, authorizing pay above the assigned grade for the public health director on an interim basis. As you know, Department Head Krupa is going to be taking over in an interim basis the mental health in addition to his other responsibilities. Mental health pays about $10,000 more than his current position. So in the interim basis, we'd like to boost his pay that extra amount of money. Only seems fair since he'll be actually doing two jobs as opposed to one. But, we're getting a pretty good deal on that, I think.
I think we still need a second, don't we? Seconded by Dooley Kiefer. Discussion? Ready to vote? Takes a short form roll call, please.
Ms. Kiefer?
Yes.
Ms. Chalk?
Yes.
Are there any no's? That's unanimous. Anything else, Mike?
That is all.
Thank you very much. Old Library Committee has no report. Public Safety Committee. Nathan Shinagawa is our chair.
Yes, the Public Safety Committee meeting will be taking place on March 16th at 4 o'clock here in the Legislature Chambers. And our meeting will be dedicated to discussion about the incident that occurred in Danby. And I'm I'm contemplating changing some of the order of public comment to allow perhaps maybe the sheriff presenting the PowerPoint of the incident and the narrative, and then allowing for public comment, because just based on some of the emails that I've received and also comments from the supervisor of Danby, that it seems like many of these questions would actually be answered during the presentation, and so that might be a better course of action. So I will get confirmation on that decision, though I plan to speak to Sheriff Lansing about that first. In addition to that, we will... that's about it. I mean, that will be the sole purpose of our meeting coming up. Questions?
Dooley first, then Martha.
I just wondered if you would consider making the meeting later so more people from more public could attend. It's not for my benefit. It's in general the public that I was thinking of.
Yeah. I have not considered that. And I don't know how I feel about that yet. I'll have to think about it. Yeah. All
right. Martha?
Well, that was my question also. And then a separately different question was, as a rep to the CJAATI board, we had an interesting report on the new attorney at first at arraignment. I mean, having assigned counsel present at every arraignment, and it's very interesting results. And I hope that the committee will take that up, you know, get a report from the committee. But mostly, I wanted to mention that I thought starting at 5 or 5:30 would be helpful.
Okay. Dan.
Well, concerning that suggestion that was just made, you should know that the Danby Town Board meets at 7 o'clock that very night. So if you're going to move the meeting up too far, it would interfere with that, and it's probably not the best.
Oh, wow.
I know previously we webcast the Public Safety Committee. Might that be thought about as well?
I would be in favor of doing that. And if Kathy is good with organizing that.
Apparently they're way ahead of me.
That's already been arranged.
Okay, fantastic.
That's good. Will.
Nate, another concern that I've heard is that would there be a possibility for the public to essentially ask questions, not just make statements, but...
I'm not sure yet, and that's why I need to talk to the sheriff, because, you know, the traditional format obviously is doing public comment and then moving right into our presentation. If we did public comment after the presentation, then we are probably then I think that part of the reason why people are suggesting that is that opportunity to ask questions about anything that may not have been covered during the presentation. I'll have to talk to the sheriff about that. How I feel about it, I don't know yet. I'll have to talk to him.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Nate. Leslin has gone. The Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee, does anyone have any report on that? I know the comment came about the solitary confinement issue that came through budget, so that came out of that committee. Anything else?
Climate survey?
I'm sorry?
The climate survey was finished?
You want to say anything about the climate survey, Joe?
It is done. It was discussed at WDIC. The participation rate was almost 60% of county employees, which is pretty good. So at this point, everything is in the hands of the consultants to do the tabulations and develop a report.
Thanks.
Do you know when that report will be?
Late March, early April, I believe.
Martha?
Yeah, I just want to mention, I sat down to do it the last day it was open, not knowing ahead of time that it takes 25 minutes. As the opening screen says, you know, you have to do it at one sitting, and it probably will take about 25 minutes, which I wasn't planning on, and so I didn't complete it. So I don't know how often that happened to anybody. But 60% is a good rate, but that was disappointing.
Okay. Peter Stein is our chairman of Health and Human Services Committee.
Yeah, I've been sitting here and waiting for this moment. I have nothing to report. We haven't met since our last meeting. We're going to meet the day after tomorrow at 4 o'clock.
That was a classic report, Peter. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Shall we take the minutes of the previous meeting, February 17? Someone want to move those? So moved by Peter Stein. Is there a second? Seconded by Dan Klein. Discussion? Are you to vote? All in favor? Please raise your hand. Those opposed? We have one opposed. Any unfinished business? Is there a motion to adjourn? By Dave McKenna, seconded by Peter Stein. All in favor of adjournment? Please raise your hand. Those opposed? Thank you all. Good meeting. Safe home tonight. Take it easy.